Welcome to the Hands On Business Podcast, the place you come to get tips, tricks, and advice on growing your business. Now, this is a podcast where you can hear real business leaders discussing systems, methodologies, and strategies that they have used to help them catapult growth in their own businesses. For those of you who haven't listened before, my name is Hakeem Adebiyi, and I've grown several small businesses to multi-million pound enterprises. And in that time, what I noticed is that there wasn't really any place that focused on where I was, i.e. growing a small business. All of the content that was out there seemed to be about big business and often just a lot of theory and not practical, implementable advice. Not one to blow my own trumpet, but I think sometimes it's nice just to read out reviews so that people get an idea of what the listeners are thinking and they are saying. So my latest five-star review from a listener called Mike Jesse said, "Stumbled upon this podcast and I'm thrilled. Get ready to meet your new favorite podcast. Hakeem has created an incredible resource of hands-on business and he leads authentic conversations that are second to none. I can't recommend it enough." Hopefully, you're going to get a sense of that today when you listen to the podcast, because I invited a leading expert on increasing business profit through change management, honest communication, and high-performing teams. Stephen Gaffney is an author and a speaker and works directly with top leaders throughout business, and I was delighted to have him on the show to talk about the four areas of high achievement. Make sure you listen all the way to the end, as there's a nice little giveaway that Stephen offers which you won't want to miss. Enjoy. Happy to be sitting on my latest podcast with Stephen Gaffney. Stephen is a leading expert on increasing business profit through change management. Now, he works directly with top leaders from Fortune 500 companies, such as Amazon, who you may have heard of, Marriott, Allstate Insurance, which you may not have heard of if you're not in the US, but if you're in the US, you'd have definitely heard of that, and even with the US government and the military. And Stephen has also authored four groundbreaking books, and he's in the process of releasing and writing a few further ones, which we're going to discuss a bit later on. So welcome, Stephen, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you very much for agreeing to come on. And generally, what I always like to start with all my guests is get my guests to give us a brief idea of how you come to be who you are today. And the reason why I do that is because people often see successful people like yourself and the other people I've had on the show, when they think, oh, you know, what they do is unattainable, and that you have some kind of superhuman powers.
Well, we do, don't we? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we're going to get into that, actually. No, I don't want to ask you about your superpower. But how often, you know, often what people start to find is when they listen to the backstory, they start to get a sense of, oh, actually, if you just do the right things, most people can aspire to be extremely successful. So effectively, what I want to just find out is, you know, how do you become, you know, where did you come from and how do you become a leading expert with four books? You know, how did it all start?
Well, there's two keys to success, and you'll see that as I'll explain the backstory, which I kind of stumbled on. One is to always pursue what you love to do. And if you're not sure what you love to do, just get good at what you don't love to do and stop doing that, you know, and keep being. And the second quality is be persistent. And so now let me back up. I fell into this line of work, and I used to be an agent for photographers, film and radio commercial directors, had a business partner at one point. But in essence, the point of it was I started to do these seminars for photographers, for creative people. And it was along lines of communication, motivation, very, very basic at that time. And I loved it. And I would just do these sessions on the side. And then my business partner at the time, she basically wanted the business for herself, the photographer, you know, the agent part. And I thought to myself, through encouragement with some friends, to just pursue this and doing sessions on communication motivation. So it evolved into honest communication. And what I discovered is the biggest problem is lack of honest communication, which produced my first book, right? Just Be Honest. And what I found out is the biggest problem is not what people say. It's actually what they don't say to each other. When you think about it, it's like, oh my gosh, I wish they would have said that, which, you know, and we can talk about all that. But that kind of grew into team stuff and now culture stuff. So it kind of all evolved. But I think what's a unifying theme is, even early in my life, I didn't know exactly what I loved to do, but I knew what I didn't love to do. And then by kind of dealing with that, I stumbled on this, what I love to do. And then, you know, you learn at being good at it. And the way to do that is being persistent. And I can tell you a funny story if you want about, you know, you just got to learn when things don't go well. Do you want me to, I can jump right into it.
Yeah, no, please do.
Because people might, because it's a little bit of, you know, what you talked about, like people look at us and they'll say, oh, it, you know, it was probably easy and it wasn't. And I'll give you a great example. So it was probably a year into me speaking on honest communication. I've been doing this for a while, but it really honest communication as I was developing this content. And I was so bad in this one session. So it was a 2-hour session. I was so bad. People walked out. Now, they didn't wait till I turned to go to my flip charts or whatever. Just walked out. So about half the people walked out. And I finished the session and I was just really crushed. I was like, I'm in the wrong profession. What in the world am I doing? I felt sorry for myself. And then I called friends of mine in the consulting, you know, speaking business. And they're like, well, not every audience turns out great. And I'm like, no, it was me. I was bad. So after I got over feeling sorry for myself, I analyzed what I did wrong. And I realized I had no idea how to manage group dynamics. And so I became an avid learner of managing group dynamics, as well as being even better, you know, working really hard at my content. And the next session I did was light years ahead of where I would have been if I hadn't had failed. So the point is, stuff happens. I mean, and it was, and believe me, it was crushing, right? So, and soul searching, and you know, we've all had things happen. I mean, I've had health issues, right? I had cancer. I'm fine now, but so we all have things happen. And I think with every problem, there's an opportunity, and it's an opportunity to grow. So you're right. It's kind of like you just persistence and pursuing what you love to do. And if you don't know what you love to do, at least stop doing what you don't love to do. You know. So anyway,
I think that's really valuable advice. And I think that persistence, if you just identified there, is the key, because I think that lots of people think that, well, if I do what I love to do, then it's just going to be every day is going to be roses. Everything's going to go really well. And I don't have to worry about it. When actually, as you just said, you might be doing something that you love to do, but you might not be that great at it when you start. Right. And you do get those crushing blows sometimes. And I think everybody, anyone who's had any success, and I think it's, I can't remember the Michael Jordan quote, but it's about, you know, the reason why you can make those three throws is because of the amount that he's failed at taking those three pointers.
Another example of this, because I think it's really important for people to come away with, but it's also the opportunity. You know, 2009 is when I got diagnosed with cancer. And as I said, I'm fine. Fully recovered, thankfully. But 2009 was also the time during the Great Recession that impacted really the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the first things to go in for companies is consulting, speaking, because it's a soft thing. Now, I think what we do is critical, but it's easy to take off because you don't have to get rid of any employees, right? At least that's where they, quote unquote, might think they could take some stuff off. So business was really tough. And so but again, I look at it as an opportunity. I couldn't control the economy, couldn't control that I had cancer, but I was in control of how I'd respond to the cancer, how I'd respond to the economy. And so I took it as an opportunity to really examine the way I was doing business at that time and really rebranded, relooked at stuff, not a strong rebrand, but I mean, just relooked at how I was doing business. And from that year on afterwards, I've had my best years in business. And what the point of it is again, with every problem, there's an opportunity. And so I could see stuff. And where I was really weak was the marketing. But, you know, it's interesting because when things go really well, you can misattribute why things are going well and easily, you know, oh, it's going this way. But when things take a tough turn, you're really left with problems that were already there that we just didn't pay attention because things are great, right?
Yeah.
And what's important about this is we're all headed. What I predict is, you know, obviously there's some economic issues that are happening, I think, worldwide, and it looks like it's going to be tough. And so what people need to look at is you can look at this as a problem and try to just deal with it, but I would look at the opportunities that afford it. So anyway.
It's very interesting. We were just speaking off air about how I'm currently in Washington and Stephen's also in Washington because my in-laws here. And actually, I remember being here in 2009 when the recession was on, actually, and there were lots of foreclosures. And I remember, I can't remember what program it was, but it was like a business program. And they were actually saying, the last time in the Great Recession that people, the most millionaires were made in the Great Recession, and that people, exactly what you just said, and actually based on that, I started my own business in 2010, and people were saying, oh, you're mad, what are you doing? Why are you starting up a business in 2010? And I didn't say anything, but in the back of my mind was, well, that program said, and it gave loads of evidence about, actually, if you focus on something that you know, and you build it in the recession, you'll be successful, which thankfully I have been as well. So that just adds to exactly what you said about you know, building in hard times.
Yeah, and you bring up another point too. I think it's easy to forget or to not take an account. Who we surround ourselves has a lot to do with how we're going to be successful.
Yeah.
So when times are tough, the last people you want to be around are negative people and you know, and people that are bringing you down. It's tough enough, right? So what I, back to that recession, the only speakers, consultants, and people in my field that I hung out with were people that looked at it like an opportunity. What are we going to do moving forward? Even when COVID hit, as horrible as this has been, right, and devastating to the world, it's still, okay, so what am I going to do about this, right? So I had to learn how to do a lot of this virtually. And so, again, I only hung out with and surrounded myself by people who were looking at opportunities. How do we move forward or whatever? I didn't want to be around anybody who's negative and who's bringing you down. And that's an important thing. In fact, I'll share with you a real quick story. Years ago, when I was starting the business, you know, again, you know, there's rocky times, but there were times also of financial, really tough times. And I remember one of my best friends would always call me and say, I'm worried about you, bud. You know, it's, are you okay? You know, you sure you want to pursue this line of profession? And, you know, I was having a tough time, right? As I shared a little bit, right? And I finally said to him, look, you're a great friend. So we really have two choices here. Either we take a sabbatical and stop being friends for a while until I get this, you know, right. Or we'll keep being friends, but I want you to stop saying the negative stuff. I got it. I appreciate the warning. Appreciate the honesty. But now that I got it, I don't want you to harp on that. So it's an option. And he chose the latter. And we have been great friends to this day. And so I say this because you have to have tough conversations with people. And there's nothing wrong with saying to somebody, look, this is my dream. This is what I'm pursuing. I don't want to hear the negative stuff. I just don't. And we don't take a stand. And that stuff allows us to infect our mind, which really does affect what we pursue. So if folks are thinking about a dream and aspiration, who are you surrounding yourself by? People that are encouraging you or bringing you down, and do what it takes to go for your dreams.
I think that is actually critical, because I've done a few podcasts in terms of on business and mindset and mental health, etc. And I think people always assume that you just have to have a strong mind, which yes, you do. You have to be a positive thinker. You have to have a growth mindset, etc. But actually, that also is dependent upon, as you've just said, who you surround yourself with. Because if you surround yourself with naysayers, even if you've got a positive mindset, it's going to be affected by that environment around you. Where if you've got positive people who are supporting you, helping you, supporting you, then you're always going to be in a better position to deliver on what your aspirations are. So I think that is important, actually, because I think people think, oh, well, I've got a positive mindset, so it doesn't matter who's in the room, I can just be positive.
Yeah, and there's something else. It's not only the people, it's what we read and what we... Let's use COVID as an example. What I thought was fascinating is that it was important for us all to be aware of what was going on. But did you ever see somebody or know people, because I do, who like suddenly became consumed with CNN and other channels, and they're watching it 24/7, just constantly. This is not a knock on the news. I'm just saying, you know, they're doing their thing, but it's important to be aware, because I don't subscribe to people who say, well, you know, you just ignore that. I don't watch the news or whatever. Well, no, you got to be aware of things, but you don't dwell on that. And so people would have that be in their mind. So you got to look at what you watch, what you read. One of the reasons why I'm such a fan of this industry that I'm involved in, we're involved in, it's not just the stuff that I'm doing, but it's all what everybody else is doing. There's great authors out there, great content, and surrounding yourself by stuff that is really great out there and just moving forward. So it's not just the people, it's what we watch, it's what we hear, I mean, you know, and read and all that stuff that plays into it. Even the movies we watch, right?
Yeah.
You know, that can impact stuff, right? So anyway, just all things to consider. Input drives output. We don't like our output. We got to look at our input and always managing what's coming into our brains.
No, I think you're right. And it's interesting you mentioned that because the COVID example is a perfect one. Because in the UK, I think the World Health Authority organization used to send out all those COVID updates. And for probably the first 2 or 3 weeks, I was reading them. And in the end, I thought, this is depressing me. It's not actually serving me in any shape or form. Because all it's talking about is how many people are dying in the US, how many people are dying in the UK. And I'm thinking, right, this is not really putting me in the right frame. So I just put a blanket. I thought, I'm not looking at them anymore, because how did it benefit me really to know how many people are dying every single day from this disease? It's just like, well, what's the point? Let me move on and focus on what I can control, because I can't control it. I can't do anything about that. Let me focus on what I can control and focus on those things. So I think you're right. All those inputs are critical. So this is a really interesting point for me to tip into. Sort of like partially one of the things that I was really interested in talking to you about was the four areas and the four key areas of high achievement, which you may have touched on already. But yeah, because I just wanted to dig into those, because all my listeners and viewers are always really interested in give me some key takeaways. So that was one of the things I wanted to speak to you about, because I know you're an expert in that area. So can you elaborate more on those, please?
Absolutely. So the first is really looking at what you love to do and jettisoning things that you don't love to do. And I want to talk a little bit more about that, because people might be saying, but I got to do things in my job or my life or whatever, my business, that I don't love to do. And I'm with you, and me too, right? Same thing. But the question is, what do we do about that? And if we are consumed by the majority of times of what we don't love to do, something interesting, we're not that great at that. Usually what we don't love is not something we're really great at. So it's an opportunity to delegate. So when we look at businesses, one of the things I find fascinating is how people want to maintain control instead of delegating. So the areas you really want to delegate are things that you don't really love to do. And overall, as best you can, because you're probably not that great at. And I've encountered a lot of people who do things, and sometimes they'll even say, but I'm really good at this. So, but you do love to do it. Does it give you energy? And is that the best of your time? So that's one aspect. The second key is honest communication, something we talked about earlier. But I want to kind of go into a little bit more. I don't mean about the truth or lies, but one of the keys to achievement is to, for us and others and everybody, to be upfront and honest. And what that really means, the biggest problem is not what people say, it's what they don't say.
Yeah.
You know, somebody once said, I think it was Dan Sullivan, he's got a lot of great content out there. All change begins by telling the truth. All change begins by telling the truth. Now, the truth to ourselves and to others. Some people sit there and they lie to themselves, you know? And the whole aspect of it is really being really clear on what the facts are. And that's an important distinction, because a lot of people think the truth is people sharing their opinions. That's okay, but that's really the truth is looking what the facts really say on the situation. So honest communication is creating that environment. So why don't people speak up? I mean, if you think about it, a lot of people withhold. We all withhold, right? To some extent. And that's because of fear. Fear of retribution, fear someone's going to take it the wrong way. So honest communication seems easy, but it's not so easy. For example, have you ever had somebody say to you, oh, listen, yeah, I love feedback. You can give me feedback on anything. So you give them, because you know where I'm heading with this. You give them feedback they don't like and they flip out. They get so upset. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not going there. And the next time they ask you for feedback, we just go, oh, I'm not going there. That's something interesting, because actually people train and condition people on how to lie to them. And the reason why they do that is because, they train us, don't go there. So we withhold. And I consider that, a lies of withholding, which can be real innocent too. It's just that we just don't go there. So it's creating that safety is so critical. So people are sitting there going, uh-oh, I get defensive at home, or I've kind of gotten upset at people. You want to, especially in businesses as well, you really want to correct that. Because it, as the boss, let's say, or as a business owner, if you've gotten upset with an employee, maybe it's warranted, but chances are what's going to happen is that person's going to be shut down. So you got to give that person effective feedback. If they want how to do effective feedback, there's something I wrote about some steps on how to give honest communication. If they send us an email and, I obviously say they listen to the show, we'll send that to them for free. It's kind of a methodology on how to have honest communication.
But have you heard of, and you probably have, Radical Candor?
Yes. Yeah, I don't. I don't know that book, so I can't comment on it, but I like the spirit behind it, right? And that's just being up front.
And I think it's probably similar to what you're going to, but I think, we'll put that link in there and make sure that people can contact you. Because I think you're right. It's about creating that environment. And leaders need to create that environment. And leaders often find it difficult because they believe, well, I'm the leader. So, I can't have too many people questioning me. And that, my view is, well, no, you need as many people questioning you and keeping you honest as possible, but giving them an environment because, leaders are often the ones that say, you need to be able to take feedback, but they won't take feedback themselves. So it's like, well, you're not leading then, are you really? If you're saying that you need to be able to take feedback, but I can't because I'm the leader. Right. So that'd be really, really useful. Okay, so you do what you love and obviously get rid of what you don't. Honest communication, and you'll obviously give some hints on that when people contact you.
I want to say something else about honest communication because it's so fundamental.
Yes.
Because you're bringing up a lot. One is the ability to receive stuff. So I've worked with some of the best CEOs, admirals, generals, all kinds of folks who also work, obviously, internationally. And they spend more time listening than they do talking. The best ones do that. I think it was Larry King who once said he never learned anything when he was talking. The content that I'm sharing is because I've been fortunate to run into people that have taught me stuff. So I'm passing, paying it forward. I'm talking about it. So there's a lot of things around honest communication and something else. The very first book I wrote, Just Be Honest, has the most important tool on how to develop honest communication with anyone. And I will give that to them, anybody who's listening, for free. So they don't have to pay for it. It's Just Be Honest. It goes, and our website's Just Be Honest. But if they go and mention the show and come to our site and they contact us and mention it, we'll send them the electronic version of Just Be Honest that has the most important trait on how to have honest communication with anyone. So before continuing, I just wanted to make sure, and people don't think, oh, he's trying to sell something. No, I'm going to give it to you. I want you to have that and stuff like that. So anyway, Just Be Honest.
No, and I appreciate that. And anyone listening or watching, I don't think you can say fairer than that. So thank you very much. Even if you get nothing else out of the show, which I know you will, then you're going to get a free book out of it just for listening. So, I can't bring you any more value than that, really. Sorry, carry on, Stephen.
Well, and the third trait for achievement is really having a successful team. And here's the thing. I often will say to people, there's never been a time ever where an individual has won a championship. Now, people will say, but that's not true. A golfer or a tennis player No, they all have a team. They have a coach, a teacher, loved ones who do errands for them, maybe support them. However it is, there's always a team, whether it's Tiger Woods or anybody who's ever been successful, Tom Brady, all it doesn't matter, whatever sport, whatever way. And I use sports as an example for a moment. In any sport, there's never been an individual that's won a championship. All sports are team sports. It's how you look at it. So why is that important? How is that relevant to us? In order for us to be successful in business, we have to have a great team around us. Nothing's going to happen without it. Even innovation. So even when you look at Elon Musk, you look at Steve Jobs, you look at a lot of people, they still had a team around them. Martin Luther King, Gandhi, all the people that we attribute to doing really amazing things, and some, of course, like Gandhi, Martin Luther King, changing the world, they still had people around them that needed to execute and do stuff. It's still a team. And so I say this because it's easy to fall in the trap of, I can just get it done. If it's up to me, I'll get it done. But really, how do you develop a team? And so there's 12 essential elements to develop a consistently high-achieving team. And I use consistently high-achieving team different than high-performing team. The problem with a lot of the literature out there on high-performing teams, performing could be confused with hard work, and it's really about achievement, and it's missing the important element and making sure everyone's clear on doing it consistently. So there's 12 essential tools. Again, if they mention your show, and we can get into this, some of this stuff, I'll send them the tools, the essential elements. But it's really critical as you move forward. and however you do it, but developing that consistently high achieving team.
So just give it, go into that a bit. I mean, you'd have to go through every single tool, but just give us a flavor of what would be the critical elements.
Yeah, and there's a lot behind each one, admittedly, right? And it's on another book that I'm working on that'll be out. But let me give you an example. So the first one, and they're not necessarily in priority order, although this is a critical one to begin with. Know your North Star PGS. So North Star, meaning where are we going? Now, this sounds very simple, right? You're like, well, that's okay, I got that. Well, how many times have you walked out of the meeting and not even known what the purpose of the meeting was, right? And I've been dropped into many organizations that are going through massive change, and I'll say, and they're having problems, and I'll be brought in to fix that. And I'll say, well, what's the outcome of the change? And if I've got 10 people in a room, senior leaders, I'm going to get probably a good 5 people who have different answers, which shows you the difficult. We can't go somewhere unless we're crystal clear. So North Star is critical, but PGS stands for purpose, goals, and strategy. So I want to kind of dissect each one. Purpose is the reason why a team exists, the reason why our work exists. Now, you see all these vision statements out there, right? Mission statements, vision statements, which are nice, but the problem is they all sound like all the other companies and organizations. What is it about your company that's so different? What is your purpose? What's driving? And it's about purpose with impact, which is a really subtle but critical difference. For example, we could say the purpose is for us to be the best in the industry, but that's all about us. There's no impact. How about this? To be the best in the industry so that our customers, let's say in the residential world, have great homes in which their families feel safe and secure. Whatever it is, I do stuff in national security. I do stuff in the hospitality industry. I do stuff in the gold mining industry. I do stuff in a lot, and as you know, Amazon and a lot of different clients. And the thing is, I'm always saying purpose with impact, because that's what attracts employees. We want to go to work for a company that's not just as a nice mission, but really making an impact and difference. There are many drivers of human behavior, but one of the key drivers is we all want to know that what we do counts, makes a difference. Have you ever been around somebody who just almost makes you feel insignificant? It's like, oh, just go do this, this, and this. And you do it, but it's like it's missing the connection to, and we want to feel important, right? Yeah. We've also been around people who make us feel important, and we will do anything for them. So purpose and then goals. Another key part, an issue with teams. A lot of teams are not run well. They're run more like committees. So there's a distinction between a team and a committee. A team wins and gets challenged together. A committee wins or loses separately. Yeah. I learned this actually from another mentor of mine, Alan Weiss. But the point being is, why does it happen? If I'm holding each member of the team accountable to a certain area, and there's no collective accountability, a goal that we're all working towards, of course they're working separately. So a lot of teams are run more like a committee because there's not these unifying goals and we're not holding them accountable. And then strategy should be simple and, you know, and not elaborate. One thing about strategy, I got to just say, and I know I'm going on and on, but it's just so, you know, people say, oh, we have a strategy. I'd say, okay. Ask employees what the company's strategy is or what their strategy is. And people go, I know it. We got it somewhere. Can you give me a little bit of time? They're not, that means they're not using it. If they don't know the strategy, they're not using the strategy. So North Star PGS.
Yeah, I like that, Pete. Yeah, Pete. And it is, I was speaking to another guy on leadership on the previous podcast, Chris Hurst, who's actually written a book called No Bullshit Leadership. And he talks a lot about this. In terms of, I think, now, which company was it? It was Enron. And I think one of their biggest values, for example, as part of their strategy with integrity, and we all know what happened to Enron. So obviously, somebody in that company was not really bought into those values. And it's like, Pete, it's true. You know, you look at values, mission statements, vision, and you can transplant virtually every single company's vision and mission statements from that company to that company, because they've not really thought about it. It's not really about the company. It's just, oh, it sounds good and it looks nice on a wall or on a screensaver, as opposed to, as you just said there, really having a proper purpose and a proper goal. And I think, again, you know, that team, I like, you know, that you said teams, not committees, where people actually are bought into a unified goal and vision and purpose.
Well, and I want to build on what you just said, because it's so powerful. You know, when you look at Enron or companies where they had something and it didn't, you know, breakdowns or they don't even exist anymore. It's part of it is also whether we define what we mean by that, and then do we live by that? So let me, I think it's a great example. Integrity. What does integrity mean? So you could say, okay, well, we're all very clear on it. But to me, one of the key parts of integrity is doing what you say you're going to do without the need for somebody to follow up. In other words, we say we're going to do something and we deliver on it without people hounding us, so to speak.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds simple, but how often are companies filled with at least some people who don't do what they say they're going to do? You know, they say a meeting will start at 9 and it starts at 9:15. They say they'll get it to somebody at Friday at 5 o'clock and it comes in on Monday. They say to the customer, we'll get back to them as soon as possible, and they're not specific on the time. And so to have a lot of wiggle room, or they do say, oh, we'll get it to you or we'll respond by the end of the day or within an hour, and it ends up not calling back the customer until the next day. The reason why I say this is because translating it into it and then holding people accountable. So one of the things I think that's critical in a successful business is doing what you say you're going to do. And when people think, okay, we do that, well, how much time do people spend and leaders spend babysitting other people? And this is not a knock on other people. It's about how we set this up, you know, and what we do. So when you take key elements like integrity or honesty or all the great values, are we translating it into behaviors? And then are we holding them accountable on those behaviors? And that's how we can make a huge difference.
Yeah. And I think if that behavior piece that most people are missing, they have a list of values, but then, you know, as you just elaborated there, if I said to 5 or 10 people, what does integrity mean to you? They'd probably give me 5 or 10 different definitions. So if you're in an organization and you say integrity, I may well believe I'm acting with integrity, but then my boss or my colleague might be thinking, well, I don't think he does. But not because you're not, but because you have a completely different definition. So the behaviors that lead us to integrity or back up that value should also be clearly defined in the business, is what you're saying. Because that way you have a cohesion, because everyone's then working to the same behaviors rather than just saying, oh yeah, well, we have integrity as a core value and everyone's doing different things. And I really like that definition, doing what you say you're going to do without the need to be followed up, because it's, you know, you and I both know, and I think everyone who's listening knows, that when you have a person like that, it's like gold dust, because you just say, right, I've asked X to do it and I know it'll get done. And you can then focus your mind on something else. There's nothing worse than when you're thinking, right, for example, I'm on holiday effectively now, and I've got a team of people, and there's people that I know will be doing exactly what they've said they're going to do. And there's other people that I know when I get back, I'm going to have to chase them up. And that's the most frustrating element of your job. Because you're thinking, well, Why can't you just do what you said you were going to do? Why haven't you just done it?
Well, and you bring up another great point, which is then great leaders hold people accountable and have those tough conversations, going back to the be honest and formulas and whatnot that I was saying about, you know, send people. It's really about managing performance and achievement and actually doing what it takes when somebody is not, to have that tough conversation and they either step up or step out, or you make some changes. I'll share with you this. I've been at this for over 25 years and I've never seen a time, never ever, where I've coached someone to actually deal with a personnel issue where somebody was not achieving what they needed to achieve, had the upfront conversation, and then made the move, right? Either they let the person go or move the person to a different position. In any case, never been seen a case where they made that move and said to themselves or said to me, I should have given that person more time. I reacted too quickly. Never. It's always too long. Second thing that's always happens, when they do that, they finally make that move, they not only say, oh my gosh, why did I wait so long? The other thing they'll inevitably say is, there's more issues than I even realized.
Yes.
It's like lifting up a rock and then seeing all the things underneath. And the reason why is because a lot of people get afraid to share certain things. And, or sometimes people will leave an organization. High achievers will leave an organization that they don't feel good about. And because high achievers want to work with other high achievers.
Yeah.
So sometimes keeping a person in that position that's not doing well, it actually has other people just leave. They'll just, you know, people who can leave will leave. So the point being is, whenever we make that move, we'll often see there was more problems than before. So why am I saying that? Because part of what makes an organization great is to manage achievement, performance. Yes. But I like the word, as I was saying, about achievement and doing what it takes to have those tough conversations. They're not easy, but they're critical. They're critical to do everyday conversations. Something else is, you know, there's a book written about crucial conversations. And, you know, I love content around that stuff, but I don't like the title because we don't want to have crucial conversations. We want to have everyday conversations.
Yeah.
A lot of reasons why poor performers or poor achievers are happening is because they've received poor feedback. We don't give them the tough feedback to begin with, and then we're dealing with a big issue. So a lot to be said about that. But having the tough conversations you need to have day in and day out, we're all going back to the honest communication piece.
And I think that it goes back to that other, the third point you gave about the team, because team cohesion, as you just said, if you've got high performers and you've got an underperformer or a low achiever, the high performer, they're looking at that and thinking, why is he or she not doing anything about it? And I've had it personally, you know, where you've then had that conversation, the person has then moved on, and then all your high achievers are like, oh, thank God, why didn't you do this? You know, because we're looking at that person, we wonder, and you're thinking, oh, so they've been actually looking at, they've been looking at the way I've been managing it and thinking, but he wouldn't accept that from us. Why are they accepting it from them?
Absolutely. People don't do what I call boss watching. They watch how we treat other people. And if we allow for poor achievement, then others will start to do that. But it also deals with something else. If as a leader, going back to if we get defensive, if we get upset, they're going to watch how we treat others and they're going to say, oh my gosh, that's going to how we they'll treat us, even if at the moment that isn't happening. So it is really important. We do set the example. And you know, something else, even leading, you can set the example up too. So leadership, there's two things I want to just say quickly about leadership. Leadership is a state of mind. It's not a position. So some people might be leading, but what if I'm not in the official position of leadership? But think about it this way. Have you ever met somebody who has the official position of leader, right? They're in charge and nobody follows them. And then you probably met people who don't have that official position, but everybody follows them. And so leadership is a state of mind. It's not a position. And the other point about leadership is part of our job is to lead up, lead down, and lead across. We lead to our customers. For some reason, it's always wired that leadership is like top down, but it's not correct. So there's a lot of skills around this, all of which we're, you know, some of which we're talking about now. But just, you know, so we can model great behavior for other people, even senior to us. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's critical for us to do. We just always have to do the right thing.
Okay, so we were on. So we did. I'm just trying to remember where we got to because we spitballed it. So number one, what you love. Two, honest communication. Three was team. Then we just delved into a couple of the essential elements around team, and that was knowing your North Star and the PGS. So what's the fourth one?
It's around culture and mindset. But specifically what I want to go into is our mood. Have you ever noticed that when you're in a good mood, you're smarter? You just think about that for a moment. When we're in good spirits and somebody throws us a problem, we're like, hey, I can handle this. But when we're in a down mood, maybe we're sad about something, maybe we got an email or something just, I don't know, whatever it is, or we're lacking sleep, whatever. And somebody throws us a problem, we're like, oh, here we go again. Mood matters. Morale matters. Our team's culture and mood and morale all matters. So the new book that'll be coming out later this fall is all around this. And there are three types of moods, morale or mindsets you really need to be aware of. The first one is a powerless mood or mindset. And we've all been in that. And you can see where people get in that. Powerless is where we say, what difference can I make? I'm only one person. It's when we're in overwhelm. It's like, what do you want me to do? I'm just one person here. Second mood is conditional mood. This is where I believe most people lie, but they don't really realize it. Conditional mood, or what I call conditionally powerful, is where we recognize we are powerful, but it's conditional. I can do that as long as they give me more money, as long as they respond, as long as I have a better boss, as long as I have a better employee, as long as I have better friends, as long as, there's always a caveat or a condition. But the desirable mood, morale, and mindset is a powerful mood. And I call it a powerful culture. And it's what I'd work a lot with organizations on. And powerful mood, morale, culture, that type of thing, means we recognize there's conditions, but we're always in the state of mind, what am I going to do about it? So think about this. Powerless is a state of resignation. What difference can I make? I'm only one person. Conditional is a state of excuses. I can do that as long as this. But powerful is, I'm going to do what it takes to make it happen. The three traits when we're all in that mood. And one of them is that we are fully responsible. We don't blame other people. We take responsibility for ourselves, right? And what are we going to do about it? Second is we believe that anything is possible. And there's a lot we could talk about, but I want to just have people consider this. When somebody says that's not possible, that's an opinion. And people say, no, I really believe it. Yeah, you can have that as a belief, but it actually really isn't true. Because how do you know something's not possible? All we could ever honestly say, factually say, is I've never seen it be done. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean it can't be done. Nelson Mandela had some kind of quote, which was in essence along these lines. People say something can't be done or it's impossible to be done until it's proven and it is possible to done. I kind of messed it up, but yeah. In essence, what he's saying is people always say can't be done until it is done. In other words, anything can be done. And if you believe now anything is possible, which is a key trait of being powerful, then when we're stopped, we're saying, okay, how am I going to make this happen? And the third trait is taking actions. Have you ever met somebody who they can take responsibility, but they don't take action? Hey, yeah. That's on me. I made a mistake. Oh yeah, that's on me. But they never do anything different. Yeah. It is so critical. So there's so much stuff on there. And the last, I want to come back to one more thing real quick, and I know we're running out of time, is about believing that anything is possible. Do you know, if you think about it, if I were to say something's not possible, that is incredibly arrogant and egotistical. Think about it. If I were to say something's not possible, that's basically saying with over 8 billion people who live on this planet, am I so arrogant and egotistical to believe that somebody has not encountered the same challenge I'm currently encountering and figured out a solution? Chances are somebody out there in this world has figured out an answer, been through a lot tougher situation. There's all kinds of stuff out there. And that's why we live in a world where you can Google stuff, you can research at their fingertips. You don't even have to go to a library. At our fingertips, even at our phone fingertips, right? Mm. Computer is access to the world of information. So we never should have the excuse that something is not possible. Anything is possible. And always pursue your dreams.
Yeah, I think that mood, I think, is a real important piece, actually, and everyone talks about it. So how would you go? If you get any quick tips in terms of, if I am in a powerless mood, or that's the sort of mindset or mood I have, how do I go from that powerless mindset to a powerful mindset?
So there's in the book, there's 10 skills to be able to do. And I'm not saying this so that, like, whether people buy it or not, it's up to them. But because I'm going to give them something, a really critical one. So actually, I'm going to go through two real quick that can make a huge difference. One is make the unaware aware. Make the unaware aware. So just by having this conversation, just by, you know, people playing this podcast and hearing especially that part with these three moods and talking about it with people, the awareness will make a shift to the powerful state. Because I want to go back to something I said earlier, but expand on it. One of the reasons why people are not in this powerful state is they think they are, but they're really in a conditionally powerful state. So I teach this all the time. And one of the biggest ahas for people is they'll say, I often thought I was powerful, but I really now realize how I'm conditionally powerful. And I'm using it as excuses or conditions or limitations. And I now see there's in a whole nother dimension about being powerful and making things happen. So I just wasn't even aware that I was being conditionally powerful. And now I see what to do to be powerful. And part of it is just being aware of that. So I've taught this to companies and organizations, all using this language, because the awareness will make people shift to the powerful. Another trait, a skill to do is reframe to refocus. Reframe to refocus. So whenever there's a problem, there's a frame, there's a context, you could say. Well, if you're being conditional or powerless and we want to be powerful, change the frame and do something different. An example would be, I view all problems as opportunities. Now, that may sound really simple, but some people say we need to fix the problem. Well, that's not really that motivating, right? If you think, well, we got a problem, we got to fix it. Well, I can't wait to have that meeting. But if I say, we're not only going to fix the problem, we're going to see there's opportunities and we're going to be better than we ever were. Now that's an exciting way to view it. So if I change the it from a problem to an opportunity, that is can a change. That's a reframe. Or how about this? A prelude, there's a breakdown, a problem. And you can say a prelude is a breakdown is a prelude to a breakthrough, which somebody else says, I don't know where it came from, but I can't remember now. But the idea is of viewing that. So when it comes to reframing, there are three types of reframe. One of them we just did, which is you change the frame, which I can show you. You change the frame to a new reality. And an example of that, I want to expand on because it's such a great way to do it, is you would say what you want to happen. Here's an example. I hired an IT company and they were we were at it for a few months and the project was getting, slowed down and it wasn't even coming close to completing. It was in July of 2020. So I said to them, when do you think it'll get done? And they said, well, it'll be done in November. And I was like, November? I mean, we're a small company. This is not that, and I was getting frustrated. So I decided I'm going to reframe this into a more powerful frame. And I said to them, given that I would ideally like it done in a month, now keep in mind, we're in July, so a month, what would need to happen so we could get it done in a month? So I changed the reality to, I want it done in a month. What would need to happen? And I'll credit the company. They came back with a list of things that could be done so that we could get it done in a month. And within 6 weeks, it was done. Now, let's analyze why that happened. Typically, we work with an existing frame. Oh, November, can't we get it done shorter? And we go back and forth. We often do in life. Or in October. But I said to myself, and what we all need to do is rather than complain about other people, what's the frame? What do we want? And use the prepositional phrase, given that I would ideally like, what would need to happen? So let's say right now, you're having some challenges at work. You would just say, given that I ideally would like to double our revenue, what would need to happen? Yeah. So that would be another, or how about a difficult time with somebody? Given that you could say to them, look, we've been at this and I know there's a lot of angst. Given that I ideally want us to have a great relationship and moving forward, what would need to happen? I'm just changing the frame from we just need to deal with all our problems to having a great relationship and what would need to happen. So you just use the prepositional phrase and plug in the ideal state you want. And you just say that. And it can change. That's an example of changing an entire frame. Another example I love to use is instead of using the word change, use the word evolve. So for example, if you're with your company, you want to change something and people say, we're going to change this. People are always going, oh no, change. I don't want that, right? What's wrong with the way we were doing it before? But if you were to say, we're going to evolve to the next step, it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
And you say, look, there's nothing wrong. We are now evolving. And it's really a true statement. Changing the frame doesn't mean semantics with the words. It means the way we're viewing it. So if you say, yeah, you know what? I can sign up for evolving. So what's it going to take to evolve to the next step? That would be another example. So there's a couple other types of reframes. Changing is one, reducing the frame and expanding the frame we can get into. I don't know how time is, but in essence, the key point is altering the frame to a more powerful frame. So how are we doing on time? I can go into the other ones if you want.
Go into that and then we'll probably have to wrap up with a couple of quick fire ones because we're running out of time, but I'm enjoying it so much. So just go into those couple if you could.
Oh, sure. So so there are three types of overall reframes. One is you change the frame. The second is reducing the frame. Reducing the frame is when there's a complex problem and people feel like, what am I going to do? There's so much we need to get done. And you simplify the problem. I think it was Albert Einstein who said, in essence, it takes genius to make things simple. It doesn't take genius to make things complex.
Yeah.
And have you met somebody that can make the complex really complex? So, but so here's an easy example for business owners, for example, or people in sales or business development. Let's say you're not getting the sales and business you want. You could say, oh, we got to change the market. We got to do this, whatever. But what if you look at a couple key performance indicators and focus on that? Let me give you an example. I work with a company that we're having problems with the sales. And so I was brought in and we looked at things and there's a lot of things we did. But one thing we did is I said, well, it looks like people are not going to see the customer enough. And what if you just focused on going to see the customer? Just focus on customer visits, really going to talk to them. And if you can't see them, right, because maybe it's either geographically not working or COVID or whatever the issue is, virtually, you know, but doing customer interactions. And by just focusing, not even the quality, not even the marketing, but just going to do that. And they immediately saw business have a huge uptick because what it was is people were too internally focused. Salespeople were filling out too much process and procedures. Everyone was getting bogged down or getting overwhelmed with all the things that we really needed to do. Instead of saying, you know what? I'm going to go talk to people. I'm just going to go talk to people. That's an example of reducing the frame. The third type is enlarging the frame. Enlarging the frame to be more powerful is where you say people are, let's say something bad happens, right? We lose a great customer and people feel like, oh, I'm really down. Enlarging the frame can help them energize and be more powerful. And the way it would be is you would say, while this is a problem and we've got to work this through and look at opportunities, in the big scheme of things, we have this customer, we have this customer, we have this customer, we have this opportunity, we have this opportunity, we have this opportunity. We're doing this and this and this. So what you're doing is when people feel down about something, it looks like that's all they see. What you're doing is you're saying, let's look at this and put it in a larger context. And then that energizes people. So that would be an example of how to enlarge the frame. Another example could be in competition. When somebody says, well, you know, the competitor, they're going to charge this. And you could say, and let's say you are higher fee, which I think is often a good thing because often higher fees bring higher is because people bring more value. You would say, that is true. And while they are offering lower fees, we have been in the business for this. We've offered this value and this value and this value. So it's almost like you're granting them this, but you're putting it in a larger frame to have the customer or potential customer see a bigger picture. So we can do this with our customer and we can do this even with individuals. And I want to go back to something else, even on growing the business. A lot of reasons why customers, don't, let's say, work with us more is they don't realize all the capability of what we can give them because we don't do a great job in educating the customer. So that would be an example. Customer says, no, we're happy, we're good. Well, if you want to enlarge the frame of all the things that you can bring legitimately to a customer because they're only going to see what they see. So are we creating a bigger picture for our customer to step into? And if you do, you can watch your business grow tremendously.
So that, yeah, and I think that's unfortunately where we're going to have to leave it almost, because and that's a nice way to leave it, because we're talking about how do you go from a powerless mood to a powerful mood. And I think lots of people either find themselves in that powerless or conditional, as you just said, and really need to move into powerful if they want to. If they really want to start moving their business forward. So that all I can say is that's probably more content in an hour than I've got out there. And I've still got about 100 questions to ask. I'm probably going to have to invite you back on because we touched the surface of a few of the key elements in terms of how to become a high achiever. So if I was to ask you just one thing that you were to say, you want to leave the audience with, because you've gone through lots of different things, the four areas of key achievement, and we've gone through those. And then each one of those elements has got, another 12 in some cases, 10 in other. You know, what's one thing that you'd say, right, if you want to be a high achiever, what's one thing that you'd want to leave the audience with?
And that is to two things, really. I don't even if I could be
so. You can.
The first, something we said earlier and really had that sink in, that the biggest problem is not what people say, it's what they don't say.
Yeah.
And getting that unsaid said. And to leave you and give you a real quick example on this. I was doing a session and a lady said, well, you know, sometimes you get that unsaid said and people get upset. And I said, what's an example? And she said, well, I gave on my peer feedback that he wasn't doing the right job and, you know, and he was dropping the ball and he got upset. And I said, well, why did you say that? And she said, you know, I said this because I care about him. I care about our team and I care about what we're up to. And I want us to achieve the goals. And I said, did you say all of that? And she said, you know, I didn't. And I said, listen, we all can get in this, stuck in this, but the problem wasn't what you said. It's that you left out all the other stuff.
Yeah.
The biggest problem in life is not what we say, it's what we don't say. We don't even say appreciation and great stuff like that, which leads me to my last point. Appreciate people. You know, in life, I've found, you know, there's never been a case where somebody's left a company because they were appreciated too much. Couldn't stand it. I got to get out of here. People thank you too much.
So true. So, thank you very much for that, Stephen. I mean, so the last points to leave on are get the unsaid said and appreciate people. And I think that wraps up a lot of what we've been talking about, especially that get the unsaid said. And also, I mean, they appreciate people because when you're giving feedback, if you're giving it for the right reasons and you let people know it's the right reasons, people generally find it very difficult not to accept the feedback. It's when you're not giving it for the right reasons or you're giving it in the wrong way where people will have an issue. So I really appreciate that. I think you'll all agree you've had some great content coming from that in the last hour or so. And as Stephen said, what we're going to do is he's going to give away some books, his first book, Just Be Honest. And I'll drop the instruction. Obviously, if you've read this, or if you've read it, if you've listened to this, and well, you can read it because I have the show notes. But if you've listened to this, then you have heard what Stephen said about how he's going to do it at the beginning. But I'll then drop that into the podcast description as well. So you'll be able to get the copy of Just Be Honest and get you on the Stephen Gaffney train, which I'm sure that you won't get off once you get on it and you'll start following him and listening to all his advice. So I really appreciate the time you spent with us this morning, Stephen, and I look forward to putting this live.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
Wow, is all I can say. We could have literally gone on for 3 hours, and I will definitely be getting Stephen back on when his new book is ready to drop. We've been all over the houses here, from how do you thrive in a recession to essential elements for consistent achievement, through to how to go from a powerless to a powerful state, and of course, the four keys to high achievement. So much to unpick, and I think this is one of those podcasts you need to listen to a few times to pick out all of those golden nuggets. Now, make sure you check out the link in the podcast description to get the e-version of Stephen's book, Just Be Honest, Authentic Communication Strategies to Get Results and Last a Lifetime. Great value every single time. I hope you agree, folks. Don't forget to check out the show notes at www.thesalesaccelerationformula.com. And as always, you know that I'm going to say, if you like what you heard, give us a positive review and subscribe. But if you didn't like it, then keep it to yourself. Keep listening and keep growing.